Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Greta Anderson. Well, this is graduation time, so we're going to focus on ISU today. And later in the show, Susan Franson will be filing a report about graduation and some of the people that are moving on and some of the people that went to Iowa State and are moving on. We're also going to be focusing on what didn't happen today. We're also going to be focusing on what didn't happen, which was Visha. Over the weekend, thousands of students received their diplomas from Iowa State University, but some left campus without the culminating experience they'd been hoping for, the final performance, fundraiser, float, or other functions associated with Visha, which was, of course, canceled this year due to street partying and vandalism that ended in serious injury. About one month ago, Iowa State University President Stephen Leith's office announced a task force of 20 members, including students, university staff, community members, and law enforcement, to be chaired by Thomas Hill, Senior Vice President for Student Affairs, and they have begun meeting to discuss this issue. Over the weekend, thousands of students received their diplomas from Iowa State University but left campus without the culminating experience they had been hoping for, a final performance, fundraiser, float, or other function associated with Visha, which was, of course, canceled this year due to street partying and vandalism that ended in serious injury. About 1 month ago, ISU President Stephen Leith's office announced a task force of 20 members, including students, university staff, community members, and law enforcement, to be chaired by Thomas Hill, Senior Vice President for Student Affairs.
We have invited Dr. Hill to come visit us and give us some insight on the process of this task force, which has already met several times and held several public forums. And he is here in our studio with us this morning. Welcome to the show, Dr. Hill.
Thank you.
Can you give us a quick description of the task to be undertaken by your task force as it was defined by the president?
Our charge consists of four elements. First of all, assess the role, relevance, and appropriateness of Visha and other university-wide celebrations for the future. The second is gaining an understanding of the underlying causes of the 2014 disturbance. The third is identifying how the 2014 disturbance was different and or similar to previous disturbances. And the fourth is developing recommendations regarding the future of Visha and other university-wide celebrations.
Okay. That's quite a lot to cover. How does this differ from past task forces?
Well,
on the topic of Visha disturbances, there have been several task forces.
Exactly. We've had a number of task forces over the years. For an example, the charge of the last one in 2004, for an example, the task force was a task force on assuring a successful Visha and other student community celebrations. There's a difference there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go at it with a slightly different approach, and our approach is really different. We're going to focus on Visha, for an example. We're going to take a look at the role and the relevance.
Your focus is more whether it should be at all. Is that right?
That may come into play, but basically we're fundamentally going to look at what the purpose is.
Uh-huh.
Are we fulfilling that purpose?
So it's more of a defining.
You can call it that, but I think we just want to see if we're doing what it is we're supposed to be doing. I don't know if that's defining.
Mm-hmm.
That's just seeing if we're on task.
So where are you on the timeline of this task force?
Well, our timeline dictates that we will have a final report by June 30th. And this is a very aggressive timeline. Our first meeting was April 24th, and so we've really got to be focused and get clear on what our role is, and that's what we've been doing in the first task force meetings. We will have that report done by the 30th, but so far we've had three full task force meetings, and we've had four open forums so far. We've got six full task force meetings left, and one more open forum. We've got an open forum tomorrow at the Alumni Center, and we'd love for all interested parties to come. It's going to be in the auditorium of the Alumni Center. It starts at 6:30.
And where is the Alumni Center?
It's on campus on Beach. It's by Jack Trice Stadium. It's in, matter of fact, it's in between Jack Trice and Hilton.
Why don't you say one more time when it is?
It will be tomorrow, May 13th. It will be 6:30 to 8:30, scheduled for 6:30 to 8:30, and it will be in the auditorium of the Alumni Center on Beach Avenue.
How well attended have the other forums been, the open forums?
Well, the open forums haven't had more than 20 or so individuals, and we're strictly talking about non-task force members. When you add the task force members, you're adding another 10 or 15 people to it. But they haven't been as well attended as we had hoped. But we've got other means for individuals to provide their input. For an example, we've gotten more than 700 emails expressing different opinions regarding Visha. And as you can imagine, we're hurriedly trying to work through a lot of that, and the emails are continually to come.
What is the general feeling in the emails about the subject?
Visha is very important to a great deal of individuals, and that's obvious in the responses. And most individuals would love to see Visha continue. But our charge, though, is to go beyond the emotional attachment, the sentimentality of Visha, which I'm not making light of. It is very important. It's very serious. But we have to go beyond that and try to deal with the facts. There are 9 purposes associated with Visha. And, you know, we're taking a look at, are we fulfilling the charge of the 9 purposes?
Can you tell us what the 9 purposes are?
Sure I can. Based on the 1992 task force, and it was once again reaffirmed in the 2004 task force findings, and 1 through 9, the first is to provide an opportunity for students, faculty, and staff to showcase the academic programs of the university and its extension services. The second is to provide opportunities for the development of student leadership. The third is to provide an opportunity to link the university to the Ames community and to the citizens of Iowa. The fourth is to provide students an opportunity for positive social interaction. The fifth is to provide an opportunity for student recruitment. The sixth is to provide a focal point for alumni activity and interaction with the university. The seventh is to recognize distinguished alumni and friends of the university. For an example, things like the parade. The eighth is to provide fundraising opportunities for student organizations. And the ninth is to affirm and sustain the traditions of the university. Those are the 9 stated purposes of Visha. And part of our charge is to determine, based on what we've been doing, whether we're fulfilling the purposes of Visha.
What is the defined problem that is causing you to come together?
Well, there's the disturbance is one thing, and it can be debated whether that was an official Visha activity or not, but it is associated with Visha, and it has that association with it. And so we've got to determine, is there anything that's being done with the celebration that can be tweaked, changed, or have an influence on that? Are we really focused in using our time, energy, and resources on the 9 stated purposes?
From listening to you, there is a question as to whether the problems that are happening in the street are a result of Visha not fulfilling its mission. Is that correct?
We really want to make sure that we're doing what we say we're doing. And I think from there we can then start trying to figure out some other things, but if you can't wind up at your destination, if you really don't have a roadmap of where you're going and how you're going to get there and those kinds of things. And so to then start looking at everything else without first assessing, are you doing what it is you're supposed to be doing? That's our starting point.
So this is a first step.
That's our first step. And in doing so, the work of the task force is really divided into 3 phases. The first phase is an information gathering phase, which we're in now, about to come to a close. The second phase is a discussion phase. The third phase is a deliberation recommendation phase. Right now, we're in the information gathering phase. It's very interesting that you can talk to a number of people and really, quite frankly, no 2 people see it exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. And so it's really difficult to come to some kind of consensus when you're starting at different points. That's why I think it's very important that we get everybody focused on what is VSHA supposed to be. And if we all have the same starting point, and that's important. So if you're going to come to, if you're going to have some kind of deliberation, have some kind of a meaningful discussion, you have to have a common starting point. There's some differences as to what VSHA is all about. If you ask a student, a new student today, they couldn't tell you what VSHA was about. A lot of them couldn't.
Some of the students that came here previously pointed out to us that the street problems, the vandalism and the violence, actually started before they were born.
Sure.
So they've never known VSHA without having that as part of the VSHA tradition.
That's part of what we're trying to deal with. What you just described is what we're trying to do. A question that we would raise is, have we done a good job explaining to those individuals what VSHA is about? Mm-hmm. That's why we're going focus once again on the purpose of VSHA. And if we can really put that out and get people to understand what VSHA was intended to do, I think we can then all get on a common starting place and then take a look at what we're doing now. Is that consistent with what we're supposed to do? And if it's not, we have a decision to make, whether we want to retool what we're doing or whether we want to change the purposes.
Mm-hmm. I understand the concept of this is a first step.
Yes.
In other words, defining the positive, really.
Yes.
But there's also an acknowledgement that we're going through all this to a large degree because there has been a problem with vandalism, violence in the street. How are you scheduling in addressing that? Since right now you're focusing on really the solution. So at what point do you address the cause of the problem?
The number two on the list of the jobs is to gain an understanding of the underlying cause of the VSHA disturbance. So I was kind of along the same lines. I wanted to ask, when does that come in?
Well,
yeah, because it's interesting. You know, we went out and interviewed a lot of, forgive me for interrupting you. Mm-hmm. We went out and interviewed a lot of students a day or two after the person got hurt on Welsh Avenue in the middle of people preparing for the next party. Mm-hmm. And everybody was very clear that the partying activity was pretty independent of what the university was doing for VSHA. And actually, I didn't meet one person who didn't love the VSHA part of it, mm-hmm. but also didn't feel that since VSHA was canceled, it was going to cancel any of their party plans.
Right.
And so it had, you know, clearly had a life of its own.
That is very interesting. We've got a history. In a long string of activities, there's a VSHA, there's a disturbance. Now, cause and effect, I'm not going to get into that. I would also suggest that those same individuals you talk to, I would love to know how many of them were involved in the official VSHA activities. That would be a good question to ask, because a lot of people say we love VSHA and all that, but they don't even know what's going on. Whether we want it or whether we like it or not, the party activities are tied to VSHA. It has happened, and I've got a list of things that have happened, and we date back to 1985.
Please read them.
Well, 1985, there was the Ash Bash. 1988, there was a campus town disturbance. 1991, there was a vehicle accident. And there are a lot of these things that you can at some point in time say it's unfair to tie it to VSHA, but it happens during that time, and whether they're connected or not, it could be a stretch, but you still, it happened during that time, and you don't know whether as a result of the partying and the things that took place led to something. And so I'm not saying VSHA is the cause. I'm just saying these things happened to occur during that time.
And the first one was in
1985. It was an ash bash where I think they burned couches and did some other things, but it was during the VSHA celebration. 88, a campus town disturbance. 91, there was the Becky Bloom vehicle fatality on Haywood and Knapp. 1992, there was a disturbance and estimated approximately 8,000 individuals involved. 1994, there was a Franklin Street disturbance. 1997, there was a Uri Sellers knifing, the young man that got stabbed to death on the lawn of the fraternity house. 1998, 1999, during that period, there were protests during VSHA of alcohol-free rules. 2004, there was a disturbance, obviously, that led to the cancellation of Vision 2005. Then 2009, there was a large fight at the clock tower. 2012, there was the Mitchell O'Dell fall from the balcony in Campus Town. 2013, there were the nap parties and a car flipped on Welch, and then 2014 disturbance. So you've got individuals who think that it may not be part of official Visha, but this is what we do when Visha comes around. I think we will have a better opportunity of making a clear separation between the official and unofficial. Right now, just as you described, the lines are blurred, quite frankly.
How are you going about researching this question? Are you, for instance, finding out how many people attend the more academic events scheduled in Visha, or?
Many data points. For example, we're doing a historical look at how Visha started, the purpose of Visha, what the campus was like at that time, what it's like now. For an example, one of the things that a lot of people still hang on to is the fact that Visha is a recruiting vehicle for the university. Well, the recruiting process has changed so much since 1922. It's not even close to being the same process. So Visha doesn't serve that same purpose in 2014 that it did 20, 30 years ago. And you have to look at that, and we keep saying that, but we've got to be careful, because if those disturbances continue to be associated with Visha, it could have the opposite effect. You can see parents in California looking on national news, seeing this university celebration that turns into a riot, and go, I don't want my son or daughter to be involved in that. So if we're not careful, we can wind up doing the exact opposite of what we said we were doing. And so data points. We're looking at what Visha was many years ago, what it is today. How many clubs and organizations were on campus 40 years ago, for an example? We're looking at that. I can tell you how many are on campus now. It's over 800. I would be willing to bet you that there were not 800 clubs and organizations at Iowa State University 40 years ago. The student population, much different today than it was 40 years ago. And if we hadn't changed some things and we're still doing the things we were doing when it was a very different university, you've got to question if it's serving the purpose, relevance. And that's what we're looking at. We've got to look at those data points. What we're very careful about doing is there's this significant emotional attachment to Visha. I got it. And it has served the university very well. It is a very beloved and time-honored tradition. But you have to step back for a moment and ask yourself, are we romanticizing about what it is and not looking at what it truly is today? Because social media has changed just about everything. We didn't have social media 40 years ago. It has had an impact on Visha.
So when you say that, are you saying that you're questioning whether it really is making a contribution?
Not whether it's making a contribution. Is it making the same contribution today as it did back 40 years ago, let's say? And we just need to look at it, and we don't need to guess and rely on individuals' memory. Because if you think about it, high school was great. When I was going through it, it really wasn't that great. There was some stress. There were some issues. Mm-hmm. But when I look back on it, I lived through it. So now it's a lot better 45 years after the fact, because I survived and I can smile about it. Going through it, it was very different. And so what we need to do is figure out what are the facts? And that's why I'm saying, let's look at what Visha looked like 20, 30, 40 years ago. What does it look like now? And I'm not making a judgment, good, bad, right, wrong. I'm not making a judgment. Let's just look at the facts and look at the data and do the analysis.
This is a very careful approach where you're really trying to look at things for exactly what they are.
Exactly.
Can I ask kind of a stupid question?
No questions are stupid.
When this all occurred a few months ago or a month ago, mm-hmm. I heard a lot of people expressing very articulately what they liked about Visha, anywhere from an opportunity for alumni to get together and reunite, young people to show their parents the college. Mm-hmm. The specific exhibits were very well loved. There was an opportunity for the band to play together the last time. There was Stars Over Visha. There are a lot of cultural and academic activities that people were very clear about that they had been looking forward to, and also that the seniors were seeing this as kind of their send-off with, you know, the college's blessing or their final moment of pride. So it was a kind of a separation ritual of leaving the college with good feelings. I heard people being very articulate about these aspects of Visha. Mm-hmm. I also heard people being very articulate about the fact of what was happening in the streets. They were pretty clear about that, too. Even the people that really, really like those parties acknowledged that they had gotten out of control. They, regretted what happened. They felt that the situation was a dangerous one. Mm-hmm. There's an acknowledgement that there's a problem. Even the people that enjoy the street party, because I think for many people it's a street party, an informal street party, but nonetheless. So this is a stupid question. Isn't there a danger that by going about studying Visha that you don't run the risk of, in fact, doing exactly what you're afraid of doing, which is calling Visha the problem? When I think just about everybody is pretty clear that Visha is not the problem, that people generally are able to articulate many things about Visha that's really working for them. What's not working for them is the way the partying is being managed in Ames, on campus, off campus, mostly off campus. You have a very short period of time. By spending this short period of time looking at Visha, then in a way, in the end, you're saying Visha's the problem.
I think in order to get at some of the other issues, we need to actually determine if we're doing what it is we say we're doing first. Mm-hmm. Because if we jump to try to solve the problem, but we're not fulfilling our original mission.
Yeah.
We've lost. I mean, we've lost our way. We're now trying to do something that we're not tasked to do. For an example, if Visha is trying to solve the off-campus party problem, for an example, mm-hmm. that's not the purpose. And if we're doing that, who's taking care of the 9 stated purposes of Visha? So I think it's really important. And I want to be clear, we're not ignoring the problem that you cite. But we are going after it in a systematic way instead of haphazard way just trying to, here's a knee-jerk reaction. There's a problem with it. Let's go solve that one. There's a problem with it. Let's go solve that one. We're trying to develop a systematic approach to this thing. There is nothing to say that one of a recommendation will be to then have another look at those other things that you talk about. But once we've really cleared up what it is we're supposed to be doing with Visha.
Right.
When you try to be everything to everybody, you wind up being nothing to no one.
So the college is being very careful and doing due diligence on first, what is it doing?
Exactly. We feel this is a very methodical way of going after trying to understand what's going on and to determine if we're doing what it is we say we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, it doesn't mean that the things we're doing aren't consistent with today's culture.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clearly, we have to determine whether it's clearly consistent with what we say we're going to do. If we're going to do something different, then let's change the purposes of it and let's not do things because this is the thing to do to attempt to solve the problem of the day.
Okay.
Okay, and we lose our way. We wind up having a celebration that we don't realize we're trying to figure out, well, why are we doing these things?
About 1 month ago, ISU President Stephen Leith office announced a task force of 20 members, including students, university staff, community members, and law enforcement, to be chaired by Thomas Hill, Senior Vice President for Student Affairs.
We have invited Dr. Hill to come visit us and give us some insight on the process of this task force, which has already met several times and held several public forums. And he is here in our studio with us.
So we were interested in hearing, how does the university currently approach the problems of alcohol on campus? I think everybody understands that there's alcohol involved with this. Mm-hmm. What kind of things does the university put in place to deal with binge drinking problems?
The first thing I would say to you, though, as we try to localize this to the college campus, we've got an alcohol problem in society.
That's right.
Okay.
That's
so
right.
Once we recognize that, we cannot expect the college environment to be very much different from society at large.
That's right. In fact, the Washington Post did a survey on it, and they found that about 40-45% of the population of colleges are considered binge drinking, in their opinion. That's a pretty high number.
It is, but I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. But
you don't think that's happening at Iowa State?
I really don't.
Okay.
And I don't think that's happening on a majority of college campuses.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't.
Okay.
The individuals who are doing it are individuals who do things like get involved with pulling down light poles, flipping cars. They get a lot of attention. There are a lot of students who are not even close to being involved in that kind of behavior. And so
right.
I think it's overstated for a bit. But we are doing things on campus to help deal with it. One of the things we're doing is help combat the misconception that binge drinking is just rampant on a college campus. When that perception takes place, then everybody thinks everybody's drinking, and that's not the case. We have, for an example, activities that are alcohol free, and we have those on a consistent basis, and those activities are well attended, gets no attention.
Mm-hmm.
We call it the after dark activities. It gets no attention, but that bingo, it would blow your mind to know the number of students that will come to play bingo or participate in an arts and crafts night.
Mm-hmm.
Things that you would think high school, grade school kids, college kids are involved in that, and they are having just a great time. And there's no alcohol involved anywhere. The media doesn't push
that's right.
that.
That's right.
So there's a perception problem here, I think.
Okay. I think we need to take a break. Thank you, Dr. Hill, so much for going through this with us.
You're listening to KHOI Community Radio. This is Local Talk. We're talking with Dr. Hill, of the Senior Vice President of ISU Student Affairs. And
Will you stick around?
I'm here.
Great. Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio. You're listening to Local Talk. I'm your co-host, Greta Anderson, here with Ursula Rudenberg, and in the studio is Dr. Thomas Hill, Senior Vice President, Student Affairs at ISU, and we are talking about the Visha Task Force. Dr. Hill was explaining that a very large part of the task force job at this point in the information gathering stage is to look at Visha, look at the role of Visha. He named 9 principles of Visha that they're kind of evaluating how well is Visha doing these things. And we, as the conversation has developed, we've gotten into the topic of student drinking and whether or not it is a problem on ISU campus.
First of all, Dr. Hill, do you see the problems that have happened in the street as a symptom of something larger in the community?
Yeah, potentially. Potentially. Mm-hmm. I'm at a position right now that I really can't, with any degree of accuracy, say what is and what isn't. I, like most people, I see a lot of things and I wonder what's going on. For an example, some people may say what's happening here is a result of having more students on campus, for an example. Well, the same things happened 10, 20 years ago. We didn't have that many students on campus. So it's really hard to pinpoint with any degree of accuracy what exactly is the problem. And that's why we're doing the studies. That's why we're looking at things, because that is a difficult thing to really nail down. And whoever gets the answer will become an instant celebrity and probably extremely wealthy, if you can figure that out and solve that problem.
Unfortunately, solving problems like this usually happen much more subtle than that.
Exactly.
I think this is what you describe as a wicked problem.
Yeah. As you were saying before the break, a lot of the solutions are invisible, really,
yeah.
You know, because good news is doesn't travel that fast, really.
Exactly.
But it runs deep. So, but one of the things I think that everybody can agree is the most obvious thing is the drinking itself.
Yes.
Because that's something that's easy to see, easy to recognize. So let's talk about that for a minute. How does Iowa State approach the issue of drinking among its students and drinking problems?
Well, one of the things we've done, and I think we've implemented this since the 2004 task force report, every student entering the university is required to take the alcohol EDU assessment.
Okay? And what is that?
It's a program that helps educate students with regards to the use and abuse of alcohol and the potential problems that it creates. Every student new to the university is required to take that assessment.
That, what is that? Is that something they fill out when they're applying?
They take it online, and there's this interactive way.
It's part of register or part of enrollment?
Well, technically no, but it's a requirement of students entering the university. I mean, you can enroll without taking it, but in order to continue, you are required to take that assessment. And what it does, it makes students aware of the problems that alcohol can create, the impact it can have on you academically, for an example, and health issues. I mean, it really is a way to make individuals aware and put them in a position to make decisions as to whether or not they would like to engage in that activity. And by the way, I think it's really, really important to note that while the individuals who are cited as binge drinkers get a lot of attention, again, there are a number of students who do not drink at all.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they far outnumber the number who binge drink.
Right. In fact, I read recently a study saying it's almost dividing into two categories, more and more so, that people that are abusing drinking and people that aren't drinking at all. It's almost kind of splitting into two ways of approaching drinking by now.
But when was the last time you saw a story in the media, newspaper, TV, or whatever, highlighting individuals who didn't drink at all?
Well, let me ask No, it's not big news. I agree.
And
no.
You're saying that because of that lack of coverage, people coming into the university might have more of a perception that that's the thing you do on college campus?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because that's all you hear. Everybody's drinking, which is a misconception. Social norms is what they call it. It's a misconception. But if that is what's covered and that's what's talked about all the time, then you come in, you may be a non-drinker, but you would think, well, everybody's drinking. I'm an oddball. And peer pressure is one of the biggest issues that young people have to deal with at that age, especially freshmen.
Okay.
During the break, we talked about the Amethyst Project.
Yes.
The Amethyst Project is a project that was started in 1980s with a series of discussions and presidents of colleges who felt that one of the main problems of a lot of drinking problems had to do with the raising the legal drinking age to 21, which in a way was driving a lot of the drinking out of the realm of legal activity. And wondering, and about 136, 140 colleges have signed on, and essentially what they're doing is they're calling for a more nuanced discussion about the effect of forbidding drinking on campus. So I guess I'm wondering, is it your perception that parties have moved off campus at Iowa State? Are there actually drinking parties allowed on Iowa State? Is drinking allowed in the vending facilities at Iowa State?
Well, no. And from the Division of Student Affairs perspective, we really don't believe that we should support in any great way activities on the part of students that involve alcohol for the following reason. More than 50% of the student body is under the legal age. So when you go down that path, what you do is you put students who are not legally able to drink in a very compromising position. And you do that from a university perspective. Now, until the laws are changed, we don't have the ability to say we're going to ignore the law and we're going to make it possible for underage individuals to partake in alcohol-related activities.
So alcohol is not allowed on campus?
No, not that it's not allowed, but you talked about in residence halls and those kinds of things,
it's
student
not allowed.
Activities.
So it's not allowed in the dorms or sororities or fraternities?
No. Well, most houses, there's some that will allow it and some that won't. You have some houses that are totally dry, fraternity houses, for example, that are totally dry. You have residence halls that are dry facilities, that are substance-free facilities, which obviously all university property is tobacco-free. But you have residence halls that are totally substance-free, which means it doesn't matter your age. You can be 40. You still can't partake in alcohol in those facilities. And we have a mixture of facilities. For example, if you are of age.
So does the university determine that, or do the fraternities determine that themselves?
Well, the fraternities determine that, and we're mixing some things. I was thinking residence halls as opposed to the Greek houses, but the Greek houses, they will have national charters that will determine whether they're substance free or whether they can have alcohol and under what circumstances. But in the residence halls, for the most part, if you are of age and in certain living portions of the residence halls, for an example, in family housing, you have the ability, if you are of age, to control your living environment.
And then does the university patrol drinking parties on campus? I mean, do you monitor that and stop them if they occur?
There are no drinking parties on campus.
There are no drinking parties on campus?
No.
So they're all occurring off campus?
If they occur, I suspect, because...
Well, they are occurring. I mean, that's what led up to this event.
But it's the same thing as you having alcohol in your home. Mm-hmm. You're off campus. I can't come to your house and say you're not allowed to have alcohol. They are treated just like any other citizen in the city of Ames.
Right. Do you think that Iowa State would be interested in signing something like the Amethyst Statement, or do you not feel, do you think that that drinking, the 21 age drinking is not really the issue?
You know, I wouldn't get so caught up on whether we sign or not. Mm-hmm. What's important is having the conversation. Okay. Whether you sign or not, to me, is really irrelevant. It's just something so somebody can talk about. Okay? Mm-hmm. I think the most important thing is that we have the conversation, we have the discussion. Mm-hmm. And until the laws are changed, we can sign everything in the world. It doesn't matter because it's still against the law.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for – will you come back and continue as the committee
Absolutely.
Progresses? Thank you. We can continue the conversation. Thank
I'd
you
like
so
that.
Much.
Thank you.
Any last word?
I would really ask that if you have an interest, the listening audience, if you have an interest, I would encourage you to participate in the next open forum, which is tomorrow evening at the Alumni Center in the auditorium, 6:30 to 8:30. But also go to the Avisha Task Force website. If you have comments, send them into the website so that we can hear from you, because we need as much input as we possibly can to make good recommendations.
Okay. Thank you so much.
We'll
you.
Link to that website on our website where we post the audio of the story.
Hello. I'm Susan Franzen, reporter for Local Talk, and today I will be sharing with you my experience of the great collective event of the past weekend, Iowa State University graduation. With just over 4,000 students graduating, there were multiple ceremonies. Three at C.Y. Stevens, three at Hilton Coliseum, and two at the College of Design. I didn't attend any of the ceremonies, since tickets were limited to the ceremony at C.Y. Stevens and my granddaughter had out-of-town guests who wanted to attend, but I did go to her party afterwards. This was not an open house, but a joint party given by the three students who'd lived in the house together during their senior year. It was more like a collective family reunion. I'm inviting you to listen in to some of the conversations I recorded. They have a personal feel, for most of those talking to me are people I've known for decades. I hope you'll get a sense of the spirit in the family of one graduate, including a peek into the interaction of the grandpas who are on opposite sides of the political spectrum. So come with me to the backyard of a corner lot on South Russell. The threatening rain had passed, and the sun was shining through the branches of one of the few remaining American elms and elms. People were sitting in circles in canvas chairs around the lawn by the flower garden with red and gold painted flamingos and an ISU banner surrounded by flowers. Finally, I saw my granddaughter Emma, and after the congratulatory hug, I told her that I wanted to interview some people at her party, and she quickly agreed and invited me to go inside to meet her housemates. Here's what they had to say.
I'm Susan's granddaughter, Emma Welch. So I graduated last night at the ceremony at 7 p.m. at C.Y. Stevens.
How do you feel today? Was it over?
In shock. I still feel like I'm just doing summer vacation, and I'm going back, and it's weird to be done. It's surreal. I think once I get my diploma mailed to me, that'll feel like, oh, I'm done. I graduated college. I worked really hard. It feels good. It feels really good.
What are your plans after graduation?
I'm currently working with Lutheran Services in Iowa, helping people with developmental disabilities achieve some goals. My plan is to stay there for at least a year and then hopefully go to grad school for marriage and family therapy in St. Cloud State in Minnesota. We actually now have my roommate Abby with me as well. She also graduated from the College of Design this morning.
Oh, I'm Abby Smith.
What are your plans now?
I'm moving to Chicago. I have an internship with 14th and Boom. It's a marketing company, and I'm going to be doing a graphic design internship with them, and hopefully will lead to a job.
How do you feel about leaving your college days?
I don't think it's hit me yet that I'm done, but I don't know. I'm ready to move on, but I'm going to miss it.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so.
Go State.
Go Cyclones.
So you're going to be a Cyclone fan as an alum.
Right. Yeah, I have my sticker that's going on my car today.
After I'd heard from Emma and Abby, a young man walked into the room announcing that he was Nolan and this was his party too. So then it was his turn for an introduction.
Nolan Budwig, graduated from the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences with a degree in biology this morning, and I plan on moving to Denver at the end of the summer after my lease is up here. I'm going to work for a little bit and then go get a degree in nursing and hopefully be a nurse practitioner or a nurse anesthetist.
Now, why did you decide to go from agriculture to nursing?
I volunteered at Mary Greeley Medical Center in the emergency room, and I saw the nurses there. I thought originally wanted to be a physician, but I just think that the avenue of healthcare that's more appropriate for me is nursing, more bedside manner. I like helping people more than just prescribing medication. So I thought nursing would be a good field for me.
So then, does graduation day feel more like an ending or a beginning for you?
I think a beginning, definitely, because I think this is kind of this day and age, it's almost one of those required things. You have to, if you want to have a somewhat successful career, a lot of times you need a college education. And so this is just, that final capstone for me. I feel like when you open up that book on an airplane where it shows all the hubs in all the airports and you see that little dot and you see like 1,000 lines sprouting from it, that's where I feel like we are right now. We're just that dot and there's 1,000 lines and we could go anywhere and I'm ready to go.
Back outside, I spotted Joni Welch, Emma's other grandmother, and I went over to greet her.
What could be better than to go to a graduation party?
Of your own granddaughter.
That's right. And would you like to talk to me about how it feels to be here with your graduating granddaughter?
Sure.
It's been a long time since I've seen you, Joni.
Yes, I think it was the girls' high school graduation party is the last time we've seen
That's
each
right.
other.
That's right.
And now we're here at the college graduation, and I am so proud of her.
Yeah.
Come from Texas to see her.
How do you feel about the big transitions that Emma's making?
Well, I'm very proud for her, and we'll pray for her that she makes it through all right. And I have confidence in her. She is a good-hearted person, and I love what she's doing. And I don't think there's going to be a problem.
There were other family members with Joni who attended the ceremony, and they commented about the great seats they had, practically in the front row of C.Y. Stevens. Nobody seemed to know quite how it happened, but I knew who would know, so I ambled over to where Emma's father, Rob Welch, was standing.
As we were walking up to the event, we saw some guy kind of leaning against the door looking a little snaky. I said, they're going to let you in here, aren't they? So we stopped. Everybody else was piling in the front. So when we actually got there, we literally walked in and walked all the way down to the front of the stage. And we're sitting right there at the front.
I know you got a great video.
So, yeah, it was good.
I love that.
It was good. And I loved the commencement speech from their valedictorian or whatever, where he did the Hunger Games, put the peace sign up and kissed and said, what do they say in the Hunger Games? May the odds be forever with you.
I could tell that this graduation was a lot different than the ceremonies I'd seen in the past, and I thought the best way to find out what it was like was to ask a couple of the graduates themselves.
Abby and Emma are sitting out relaxing, and they were talking about their graduations. They had different graduations, is that right?
Yes.
And so let's start with you, Emma. You graduated on Friday.
I did, yes, in the Liberal Arts and Sciences graduation ceremony. We all went there and huddled in the back for about an hour getting lined up and walked into the processional, and everyone was in C.Y. Stevens just taking pictures. And it kind of was weird. I felt like I was famous because everyone was clapping. Like, we walked through this room and all of the professors were there, and they were all clapping as we were walking through, and it was funny. And we had a really interesting speaker, our either valedictorian, or he was of some sort of genius. He got 2 degrees in math and physics, and with a 3.99, which was crazy. And he was just giving a really funny speech, and everyone was just enjoying it. And It was a really good time. It was really fun.
And I understand, though, it was quite long.
2 hours. 2 hours of sitting there. And the speeches weren't that long, which was, you know, the brutal part was everyone's waiting for everyone's name to be called because you just wanted it to be you. And they went through the majors alphabetically and then went through each major after the alphabetically within that. So I was P, psychology, and then W, Welch. So I was one of the last people to walk up, and I was just sitting there like, am I going to trip? Am I going to mess up?
And so what happened when you did walk across the stage?
Actually, it's funny because I was so worried about messing up, and then they messed up. They called me Emily instead of Emma and called me Emily Louise Welch. But it was still fun.
This was graduation day, spring 2014. You've had a peek at just one of thousands of celebrations that took place with parents coming from as far away as China. I think it's typical that the graduates on that day were full of anticipation and hope. Their relatives and friends were proud, and only the oldest generation privately voiced their deepest concerns about the future the graduates would be facing. It's a sign of the times that no one I spoke with seemed interested in the main ceremony taking place in Hilton Coliseum at exactly the time of our party. Just for the record, this year's keynote speaker at that ceremony was Iowa State alum Brigadier General Patrick J. Doherty, who entered the Air Force in 1987 through the Air Force Reserve Officer Training Corps, ROTC, program at Iowa State University, where he earned a Bachelor of Science degree in Aerospace Engineering.
We have watched you since the day that you were born.
That was a portion of a report filed by KHOI reporter Susan Franson on the ISU graduation ceremonies that have been occurring. We've been focusing today on Iowa State University at the end of the year here on Local Talk. And we were speaking earlier with Dr. Thomas Hill from the President's Task Force on Visha, which is in the middle of its fact-finding process. Dr. Hill is Senior Vice President of Student Affairs at Iowa State, and he's chairing the task force. We've been your hosts today, Greta Anderson and Ursula Rudenberg, and James Winters engineered the show. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. This show will be available online by the end of the day, also with links to the Visha forums, past and future, at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. You can also use that address to send us feedback on our shows or donate money to support our operating budgets. As always, your participation as the listener and your generous donations are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.